So I am going to continue a little bit about what I was talking about in the summer, which has to do with the book For Love of the Real. And in particular, how it completes a body of work that I began 25 years ago with my first real book, The Bond with the Beloved, and what that really means spiritually and what it has to do with the journey we are all on. And I think it's good to begin at the very beginning. And I found particularly in recent years, it's good to go back to what is essential, to what is really the core of the path. Everything in creation has a connection to the Creator. This is the nature of creation. And because the world was created out of love for the sake of love, this is a connection of love. And that's why I called the first book, the first exploration of this, The Bond with the Beloved. It's this link of love that exists between everything that is created and the Creator. And because we are Sufis, because the Creator for us is our beloved. This is really important. It's like the core. It is a link of love. And because we are Naqshbandis, it is about binding together. It is a bond of love. So it's the bond with the beloved that is within everything that exists, but those of us who are drawn to love God consciously, to live that mystical truth of this relationship, it is this bond with the beloved. It is the core of our being. And what the Sufis have discovered or expressed, certain esoteric truth, is that this bond with the beloved exists within everything. And there is a beautiful saying in the Quran: do you not see that all that is in the heavens and the earth and the bird in its flying is praising Allah? For every being knows its own way of prayer and praise, and Allah is the knower of all that they do. Everything in creation is an expression of this bond of love, is living this bond of love. But as Sufis, we are drawn to make it conscious, to live it, to make it in a way the purpose of our life, which is why I titled this book 25 years later, For the Love of the Real, that we live for the sake of this love, for the sake of this connection of love, this imprint of love, this bond of love. And it's very simple but easily overlooked. And the Naqshbandis have an expression for this bond of love. It's called Nisba. And it is in everything, and people to have it to a greater or lesser degree. For some people it is more conscious, it is more evident than for other people. But the path, the journey, the relationship with God as a conscious undertaking begins when this bond of love that is imprinted into the soul, that comes into creation, is woken up. And that is the moment of Tauba, the turning of the heart, when through the grace of God, the finger of the beloved goes into the heart and touches the heart with this spark, with this divine energy, with this fragrance of the beloved, however you call it. And this is Tauba, the turning of the heart. And esoterically, it is very simple. The heart chakra starts to be spun at a higher frequency to bring the consciousness of divine love into your waking consciousness. The heart chakra is spun at a higher frequency so that this bond of love is no longer dormant. It begins to be lived, to want to be lived. It calls to you to live it. And really the whole path is a way to live this bond of love, is a living of this link of love, so that everything you do is for love of the real, for love of God, for love of the beloved, because, and I return to this again and again, for the Sufis, it is a love affair. I remember Mrs. Tweedy, when she was in her early 90s, saying to me, if you are not in love, there is no point in life. And that is how it is for us Sufis. If you are not in love, you can't live it. It's not an idea. That was the moment when Rumi met Shams and the theology professor became love's poet, love's troubadour, the mystical poet that we know, because he was carrying these books. And Shams just made them all burst into flames. What is the point of books? What is the point of ideas? What is the point of study? It is to live this love affair. And it's like any love affair, like any passion. Sometimes it burns hot, sometimes it burns cold, sometimes it's more distant, sometimes it's nearer. This is how it is for us. Now, when I wrote the first book, The Bond with the Beloved, I really wrote about experiences of meditation that take one deeper and deeper and deeper within this connection. And then over the years that passed, I began to understand how that inner mystical presence becomes lived in the outer world and becomes lived, in fact, in all the planes of creation. And in this book, I describe as much as I can how the love and the real that is the source of this love comes back into this world, and how it is like the cycle of the breath. There is the in-breath when we go back to the beloved, then the out-breath in which the love comes into this world, and we are needed to make this cycle of love take place. We are here for the sake of love, for the sake of the real, to bring this love right from the innermost planes, right down through the planes of creation, through the emptiness, through the planes of oneness, through the in-between worlds, into our bodies and into the earth where it is needed. And part of the teachings I have been given in the last few years that I have called spiritual ecology is really about living that love in relationship to creation, which is dying for the lack of a certain spiritual nourishment. In the core of our being, there is this imprint of this connection, this nisbah. And when we are drawn to the path of love, when that spark within the heart is awakened, then begins the work of living it. And one thing I have discovered is it has a lot to do with relationship. It is how do we live this relationship of love that is in the core of our being. And how do we live it both as a soul and as a human being? And it seems to need this very, very insignificant part of ourselves, which is this human being. You know, maybe I can explain a bit, is that, you know, one thing you discover when you go into meditation is the enormity of the soul and what is beyond the soul and these great vistas of the divine and how insignificant you are, and you just get lost somewhere in it all because it is so tremendous, it is so other, it is so The horizons are so vast that the drop goes into the ocean and you are lost in it all. And the light is so bright, it is so beautiful. When I was 23 and my sheikh woke me on the plane of the self, and there was nothing to do. How can one do anything? There was just light and love and joy and bliss. And in a way, that is the simple part, as I've discovered, because then I had to come back, and then I had to learn how to live it amidst the ordinariness of life. And this is the other aspect of the Sufi path, and particularly the Naqshbandi path, is the ordinary. As much as there is this imprint, this nisba, this bond with the beloved, there is also the ordinary. And it's how you bring those two together, how you weave those two together, that is really the hallmark of those who become mature wayfarers on the path. It always begins with this divine mystery, and I think it's important, even after many of you have been 20, 30 years on this path, to remember that it begins with this mystery, which is an act of grace. And so you begin with this mystery, with this imprint, this nisba in the heart, this bond with the beloved, being awakened by divine love. And it calls you. And in a way, the whole journey is making a relationship and living this calling, which is of course different for each of us because we are each different. But then there is the very human part that is so full of contradictions, and so it's such a mixture. What are the parts that get in the way, and what are the parts that help in this process, and how can you develop the parts that help? Compassion, generosity, service. What are those qualities within you that you need to develop that, in a way, echo qualities of the beloved? And what are the qualities in you? Meanness, selfishness, anger, all of those qualities that somehow constrict you, contract you back into yourself. And that is, of course, why we have Adab, and why I've spoken so much about Adab, because Adab is really an ancient understanding of how to live the qualities of the soul as a human being. How to live the qualities of the soul as a human being. And you can have all the wonderful inner experiences you want, but if you don't have Adab, forget it. We walk this path as a human being. It's a relationship. It's a relationship between this very human, very fragile part of you and the other, and your beloved, and your friend. It's how you live it. It's how you bring those two together. That's what I tried really to describe in this book. In the first book I wrote, it was just about states of meditation because that's what was most precious to me at the time. And then I have been shown that it really has a lot to do with a relationship of love with your beloved, your friend. And living that in everyday life, in community, in everyday life. As the world we live in has become more and more toxic in the last decade, two decades, and it has, and I'll talk about that a bit more tomorrow because it's something one can't forget or brush away. As it's become more and more toxic, these essential, simple human qualities are more and more important, and we have to sometimes fight to stay true to it. You know this bizarre thing people have, it's called a selfie, and people are obsessed with. And as the culture kind of gets more and more self-obsessed with its selfies and its likes and dislikes, and to stay true to a certain selflessness becomes strangely harder. It's very simple things, that it's not about us, that it's about care and attention for others and care and attention for the beloved and staying true to this link of love in a world that becomes more and more toxic. It actually requires more effort. You would think it would get more effortless as you went on the path. I have found in the past few years it requires more effort, more attention. When I first wrote Bond with the Beloved, it was very simple. You have this link of love, you live it. It's like the first practice Mrs. Tweedy gave me was Brother Lawrence, seeing God in everything, the practice of the presence of God. Wheresoever you turn, there is the face of God. It's such a simple, such a beautiful practice. You do that in the outer world, and you go into meditation in the inner world. It's so simple. But it's not so simple anymore. It's just the world we live in. It's become more toxic. There are stranger things present, not just selfies. Things get in that weren't there before. And we're very naive as a culture. We don't know what comes in through the cracks. And we don't know what's there. And it requires more and more attention just to live this link of love. And what I want to try and give you is to give you all the support. You can get as much energy and love given to you on the inner planes, but if you can't keep this connection pure and simple and aligned in your everyday life, it's kind of a waste of time. And this has actually been shown to me recently a number of times, which has to do with attention. Because part of our path and part of the principles of the path that we were given by Hujivani many, many centuries ago is to be attentive. Watch your step. We have awareness of breath. We have watch your step, to be attentive. I always say we don't practice mindfulness on this path. We practice attentiveness. It's actually very subtly different. Mindfulness is a state of mind. It's a very nice spiritual practice. You are mindful of what you are doing. I hate to say it, it's a little boring after a while, being mindful. Look, we are lovers. And imagine when you are making love if you're always mindful of each other. I don't think anything would really happen. You can be attentive to your beloved, yes. And that's fine, but to be mindful all the time, it's a little dry. But we learn to be attentive, to learn to watch what's going on, and we watch what's going on in the inner worlds and the outer worlds. Also, there's this very popular spiritual practice, living in the now. Very good spiritual practice, very nice. Again, after a while, a little boring. There are so many other levels of reality. The now is in a particular plane of reality, and you go there and you sit there. It's like always being in peace in meditation. Have you tried that? Very nice state. You go into meditation, you are in peace. Next year, you are also in peace. But again, a little boring. Not a lot going on in peace. But a love affair isn't just about being in peace. Remember, we are lovers. And as I've tried to explain in this book, you can live this love affair on all different levels. And let's live it fully on all levels. If you think the whole of this, what we are involved in, is a love affair, and you give yourself to it, and you forget yourself in it, and as much as you are attentive, you are also divinely forgetful, because there are moments you forget. And so it's, yes, you are attentive to the moment, yes, but you are also... Sometimes you get lost. Sometimes you don't know where you are for days. It's an ongoing mystery. You never know what the next day is going to be. It's anything but not banal. And behind it all, within it all, there is this mystery of your very humanness relating to this beloved, this whatever it is. And I have less understanding of what the beloved is than I did 40 years ago. Whatever you think is the opposite of that, it's more, it's less, it comes behind the corners, it gets you, but it does require, like any love affair, it has a code. And the Sufis have described this code, because love's very human. And there is a way to live love. The Sufis have been living love for centuries. They're the only people who've really written manuals about it. Yes, a few Christians have written some, but the Inquisition wasn't very keen on it because torture and love, well, they do go together, but that's another story. The Sufis have written about love. They know the code of love. There's a great Sufi, Jami, he said, never turn away from love, not even love in a human form, because love alone can free you from yourself. And they know the human love and they know the divine love. And it's a very subtle mixture. If there's too much focus on the divine, you lose contact. You get inflated. It's like when Bysab criticized Mrs. Tweedy, he said, you're not even a human being. There's nothing more human than love, because love's about your heart, it's about your vulnerability. If you are not prepared to be vulnerable, the door's over there. You become vulnerable, but you have to learn how to be vulnerable in the right way, and there is a code of love. And this is really what is called adab. If you don't have this human container, this way to live, this courtesy, it's simple courtesy, then you can't really come into the chamber of lovers. It's like that in a human relationship. If you don't know how to care for the one you love in the right way, and be there and not be there, and there are subtleties in the human relationship of love that you need to learn, most of us need to learn. You can learn it in a human relationship, and then you learn it also being with God. And there are sometimes, you know, it seems God is not interested in you at all. And that's fine. And you learn to live with that. And yes, you learn to complain about it too. And it's like, how are you going to live this human part of you that is forgotten by God, or appears to be forgotten by God? When is it okay to get angry? When is it just self-pity? When is it... There are these subtleties of love, and yes, there is this code of adab, this code of how to be with your beloved, and how to be attentive to love. I think I once gave a series of talks about being attentive to love. You actually learn to listen with the heart. It's strange in our culture. We know so many things and we have forgotten so many things. It's like Thomas Berry when he says, we've broken the conversation. We no longer learn how to listen to the river and listen to the wind. And we've forgotten how to listen with the heart as a culture. There's a certain way you learn to listen to. It's one of the first things Mrs. Tweedy taught me when she said, when I realized I had to learn to work with people, she said, you know, when you sit with somebody, you put yourself to one side. And she said, you can do it quite deliberately. You take yourself and you put yourself over there. So you are just there listening to the other person. So it's also about being present in emptiness, and I've spoken to you about learning how to be present in emptiness. Most people fill their lives up. We empty our lives. This is part of the learning how to have as much space as possible. It's one thing we as a group learn how to work with space. We don't work with stuff. we work with space. It's, for some reason, it's a spiritual teaching that hasn't made its way into the West very much. You learn how to work with emptiness. You learn how to work with space. On one level, it's just so you can listen to your beloved. If you're always talking, you're not listening. And one of the secrets of mystical life is the beloved has a lot more interesting things to tell you than you do. If you want to learn about the mysteries of life, you have to listen. It's interesting, actually, because a lot of contemporary spirituality seems to be focused on how spiritual practices can help you in your life. How you can have a better relationship with your partner, or learn to manage your anger. Maybe you've come across them. There's a lot of contemporary spirituality is how it can help you in your life. What interests me a lot more is how spiritual practices can open you to an awareness of the beloved. Because to me, that is what is interesting. Yes, your own life can be interesting, I guess, in your 20s and 30s. Maybe in your 40s, I can't remember. After that, it gets a little bit boring, no? You've kind of done it all. The beloved is much more interesting. Other people's hearts are much more interesting. The beloved is much more interesting. The mystery is much more interesting. The patterns of relationship behind it all are much more interesting. So I go back to this, you're trying to make a relationship with the beloved. For some reason, and I don't understand why, it is said, I was a hidden treasure and I longed to be known, so I created the world. For some reason, the great, great, however you call it, beloved, created us because he wanted somebody to tell his stories, his love stories to. I think that's what Sufis are. We're the people who have to listen to the love stories of the beloved, because most people are too busy. If they're not busy in their outer life nowadays, they're looking at their smartphones and they are tapping and swiping all the time. Strange world. And behind it, there is this extraordinary love story taking place. We are here to listen to the stories of love. We are here to learn about the stories of love. We are here to participate in the stories of love. That's what our little human consciousness can do. We can listen to love. The heart gets woken up. You can't do it if the heart isn't woken up. But once the heart is woken up, and everybody who comes here wouldn't be here if their heart hadn't been woken up, because they wouldn't be interested. Once the heart is woken up, learn how to live with an awakened heart. And that's really what the Sufi practices and the teachings are about, learning how to live with an awakened heart. Finding out what the heart is for. As we are put on earth, a little space to learn to bear the beams of love. We are here to, as human beings, to learn to work with love, to learn to be attentive to love, to learn to listen to love, to learn to live this connection. I say it's very simple. This bond with the beloved is imprinted in the soul. I go back to that essence. It is latent within everything in creation. Everybody has it. The Naqshbandis have developed a science of it. They developed it a long time ago. And they understood how to work with it. They understood how to activate it. And they gave, Hojimani gave these principles, awareness of breath, to solitude in the crowd, watch your step, to learn to be consciously in the right place, to learn to be consciously attuned. If you're going to be a car mechanic, you study the car mechanic manuals. If you're going to be a lover of God, you study the lover of God manuals. It's not complicated. You learn how to listen within the heart, how to put yourself to one side, how to love people. And for me, that, so say that this was a revolution, because I grew up in a family in which love wasn't present. And suddenly I came into this place where love was present, and I saw how love worked, and I saw people fall in love with this 80-year-old lady. And it's the real thing. You know, if you're going to do something with your life, do it for love of the real. Use what is real. Love is real. It's beautiful love. It's, sometimes it's sweet, sometimes it's tender, sometimes it's terrifying, sometimes your heart aches, and then this sweetness comes into your heart, and then and you feel this closeness with other people, and it takes you into the soul, and it and it's very human. That's what I like about love. Yes, there are amazing states of meditation if you have the grace to be given them. You can go into places where I was called the farther shores of love, where the sun never sets. It's just, there are just rivers of love. But it's also terribly human. And it's about care. It's, that's why I say being attentive to the moment. I got really upset with some people in our group because they weren't attentive to the moment. They weren't attentive. I'd been too caught up in their business and their this and their that, and suddenly there was a moment that they were needed. You know, most of your life is kind of like watching reruns on television. There are moments that matter, and you have to be attentive to that moment when something needs you and something, your heart is touched, when another dimension is present, when suddenly there is this perfume, this fragrance, when otherwise you are like the man in the who spent his life searching for Krishna, and he went into the chapati shop and Krishna passed by. So he never got to see Krishna. The heart is extraordinary because the heart functions on many different levels of consciousness at the same time, and the heart doesn't belong to time and doesn't belong to space, and it's at the same time deeply human, and you are touched, and you can put love in somebody's heart and change them forever. And that's Sufi secrets. And you learn to bring this thread of divine love and weave it into your life. It is like weaving a tapestry, like telling a story, so that your life is a story of love. Your life is a love story. So it's very banal, it's very ordinary, and it's very extraordinary. And that is the Naqshbandis also bring together the extraordinary and the ordinary. It's a particular combination. It's like an alchemical combination. If it's too extraordinary, it doesn't work. If it's too ordinary, it doesn't work. It has to be this mixture. It has to be this mixture of the different levels, different realities. And that's why I wrote this book that showed how all the levels work together. They are woven in and out of each other, and they are different, and yet they are part of this tapestry of divine love that we call creation, that we call life, that we call the world. And we are here because we have been called to live it, that's all. To live it both as a human being in the few years we have here, and also as a divine being. And it's this combination that then wakes something up. And if we can really be with it, then something has changed. Something has changed within us and also within something more than us. It's very simple, though, because love is simple. Love is a simple essence. It's deeply, deeply human and incredibly divine. I think that's why it's such a mystery, because it's the two together. It is. You can see when a young mother has a child in her arms, and there is this love. Where did it come from? Why is it there? And it's also, you go into meditation, or you, I haven't had it for a while, but I used to have some experiences with Bicep, and there was just so much love. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I could be loved so much. I just couldn't believe it. There was just so much love, and I just wanted to spend the rest of my life sitting at his feet because there was so much love. It was so complete. It was, you don't want anything else. Those are the stories of love. Those are the stories of the soul. Those is the, it's the way we really are. But we've forgotten. And so I just go back again to what I was saying. There is this imprint within the heart, this bond with the beloved, this link of love that we all have. And then if we are destined to be a Sufi, it gets woken up. I think on any spiritual path it gets woken up, but if you are destined to be a Sufi, it gets woken up with a particular frequency of love. And then traditionally you look for a teacher, but really you are learning how to live this link of love as both a human being and also as a divine being, the in-breath and the out-breath. And the practices are necessary because they help you to keep aligned with this link of love. Learning to be empty gives a space for the mystery of love to take place within you. And of course, putting yourself in the hands of the beloved, surrendering to love, because that's all we ever surrender to. We surrender to the will of love. If there's no love, then there's no journey on this path. We are taken back to God by love.